Blog Talk Radio.
Bye. We got Ryan Ballingy, our great friend and colleague, going to join us coming up in a couple minutes. He's going to preview the Masters with me. And then coming up also in a couple minutes, we're going to have Kyle Brennan, who's going to preview the final game, the National Championship game, and what the bracket situation is for his Stats Bracket Challenge. Tiger is on site. He is playing. We'll talk about that and his impressive practice session, including chips, when we talk to Ryan in a couple minutes. Beautiful day out there, 71 degrees here in the Swamps of Jersey under beautiful sunny skies. It's really nice conditions to be doing anything outdoors at the moment. Muhammad Wilkerson of the Jets did not show up to voluntary workouts. The NFL offseason workout program. Nice when we have the right term. Program. Started today. He, who saw the Jets spend $10,000 million on secondary, wants a new contract. I hope this gets done. The Jets clearly should have enough money to pay him. Do they have enough money to pay him is another story. We will get to the bottom of that one as time goes on. But Muhammad Wilkerson not only needs a new contract, he deserves a new contract. He has clearly outplayed his rookie deal, and the Jets need to lock him up. And then after that, I think they'll be good in terms of locking players who have been so important to them up long term. As for Adrian Peterson, and obviously when the Adrian Peterson situation gets eventually resolved, we will have Luke Morrow with us to talk about this. It's fascinating. He first needs to be reinstated. That could happen as early as tomorrow. If that happens, and you're the Vikings, at what point do you say we cannot do this anymore and we need to make a change in direction and ship him out of here for the better of our team? We know that he wants to go to Dallas. I think that's no big secret. And Dallas would welcome him with open arms. But if he goes there, it completely changes the dynamic of that team, and also could change the dynamic for the Vikings, who have a disgruntled player on their hands who they cannot seem to get rid of and risk bringing that in further along. Look, we're a long way off. Mini camps are in June. OTAs are in May and June. We're a long way off from this. The only reason why the Jets are in here right now is because when you are you have a rookie coach, you can add a week of training to help with the staff. So clearly, that's where we are. We'll see how this progresses with Wilkerson, and we'll see how this progresses with Adrian Peterson. We are going to take a break. Come right back. Kyle Brennan's with us, followed by Ryan Ballingy. It's National Championship Monday, and it's Masters Week. We'll talk about it all in 30 seconds. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling.
Sometimes tough isn't enough.
Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
And we now wait for Kyle Brennan. I may have said Kyle Wilson before the break. I meant Kyle Brennan, who runs the Stats Bracket Challenge. It includes dogs. Yes, dogs can pick your bracket. Very important to have your dog pick your bracket. And we wait for him to preview where his pool is at the moment as we go into this national championship game. Obviously, Kentucky's no longer there, but it's a very dynamic and interesting national championship game. You've got a Wisconsin team that clearly is off a huge emotional high, an unbelievable return to their hotel, where they were welcomed like heroes back there at Team Hotel. If you haven't seen the video, Google for it. It's amazing. Google it. And yet they have to get past what to them was as big and as important as a national championship game and move on to the work at hand, which is being a Duke team that was there last year and obviously, was not there last year. UConn was there last year, but has seen recent greatness, has a flair in Okafor, who's going to the NBA, could be a Nick by the time June comes. It's a very dynamic national championship game. And to tell us how the brackets sit, we welcome in the unabashed sports writer and big country music fan from the Republican American. He is Mr. Kyle Brennan. Plus he drives a Chevy, which is fantastic. How are you?
You're darn right I drive a Chevy, and that's how it'll always be, Chair.
The small town guy drives a Chevrolet, excuse me. Where are we in the stats bracket challenge?
Well, of course, this is year number 11, so all sorts of excitement. We're in officially our second decade, so glad you were able to be a part of it, as many were. Of course, we're down to our set, you know, a little bit of possibilities now with Wisconsin and Duke. I don't know exactly what the breakdown was, but I'm assuming just by scrolling through my challenge a few times, it looked to me like probably about 50% of the brackets had Wisconsin, or I'm sorry, Kentucky winning. And then I think the second biggest pick was Arizona. So, I mean, you're looking at probably the 3 and 4 sort of most popular champions. One of the two are going to win here. So always exciting when that comes. And it sounds strange because this is, I think, only the seventh time I read today that two number ones are in a championship game. So, you know, at least we've got a chance. I've had years before where we had nobody pick the champ, right? So at least it'll come down to actually mattering who wins or who loses this game. So it'll be fun night for all involved.
How many different champions could we walk out with?
Well, of course, there's only, I believe, only two possibilities, because I believe the girl at the top of our pool, our friend Nick Zarbinski's girlfriend, actually, she's at the top, and I think she picked Wisconsin. So if Wisconsin wins, then she is our champion. And if Duke wins,
right,
I'm blanking at the top of my head at the moment, but I do know that our friend Len Neslin, he would pick up third place in the competition if Duke wins. So we've got some people in the Quinnipiac community, of course, former Bobcats, the alumnus, who we could be looking at the big money by the end of tonight.
We've got two people, Gianna,
yeah,
and
yeah,
Mike, who both picked Wisconsin. JP picked Duke.
So there you go. So it's either Gianna or JP, and I believe JP is a friend of our another QBSN alumnus, Jordan Katz. So the Bobcats have their hands all over this competition in one way or another. So there are only two possible champions. We've had, you know, in the past where either the person at the top could stay there just if the champion was not playing or did not end up winning. But now we'll either have, look, if you win, here's our top three. If you lose, or if Wisconsin wins, here's one top three. If Duke wins, here's another top three, which I'd say in the past of this competition, a lot of times we don't have people who pick one or the other, you know, to win. Usually we have one team in the championship game that somebody's riding on. So we'll have somebody be able to jump up to one or two, but somebody might be locked into the cash. This time, nobody's locked in. So all three places depend on what happens tonight.
As we sit here and look at this game, what do you see? Obviously, there's a Wisconsin team that, as I was saying before you came on, basically just played the national championship game. And
yeah, felt like
the emotional high that they got and that unbelievable reception they got back at their hotel, they need to move on because that was only a national semifinal game. And then you look at Duke, who has been here before, fully expected to be in this game and played the national semifinal like it was a national semifinal.
You know, it's one thing you say that Duke's been here before. Okay, Coach K's been here before. None of these guys have really been here, you know, for the most part before. And you've got a Wisconsin team that, you know, it's a program that, you know, it builds upon itself, it seems like, every year. And it just doesn't feel to me like the guys in Wisconsin, you know, maybe at the time they felt like that was a huge game, but, you know, it seemed like they had the confidence that they could win the game. It wasn't, you know, an upset to them anyway. I think we're going to move on pretty well for tonight. I think we're going to have a good game. I think it comes down to the battle on the glass. You know, Wisconsin really had dominated the game the other night against Kentucky until the Wildcats were able to hit the offensive glass and get some putbacks and some easy buckets. And so if Wisconsin's really locked down in that defensive glass, like they've kind of done all year, it's easier said than done against a team like Duke. I think that becomes the biggest factor either way.
Who do you think walks away as champion of the world? Because this is the world, obviously.
That's correct.
Who takes the trophy for planet Earth tonight?
I think it's Wisconsin. I think they've I had a sneaking suspicion. I was down to three teams to pick before this tournament started, and it was Kentucky, Arizona, and Wisconsin. And I had one of those sneaking suspicions for Wisconsin. I should have stuck with it. Did not, of course. I think they're gonna make it happen. They got lots of versatility, and they got guys who, you just, if I'm a coach out there in college basketball, you know, I see guys on this Wisconsin team who I want the ball in their hands near the end. Not to say that Duke doesn't have some real good ball players, but you know, you got junior and seniors here in Wisconsin, and just feel good with them. And if it comes down to a possession or two late, That's the team that I feel comfortable with, and I think that's how it'll all play out.
Any Masters thoughts?
You know, I saw that I know when we ran the odds in the paper last week, I think it was the day before Tiger said he was going to officially play. I think they had him at 40-1. I don't know what the odds became now, but anybody betting on that, I think it's absurd. Glad to see him back, and I think he's converted a lot of the people who were rooting against him into people who like to see him at least be competitive. I don't see how you can go against my boy Jordan Spieth, though, at the moment. So he's my guy this week.
As you sit here right now, and you cover a lot of high school, college, you know, small stuff, big stuff. You're a small-town guy with a Chevrolet.
That's right.
Do you get more of a thrill watching high school stuff, college stuff, or professional stuff?
No, I mean, it all has its moments. I had a really good time covering a local team that hadn't made a high school basketball, had not won a high school basketball state championship since 1942. They came within a couple of possessions of winning a state title 2 weekends ago. And I actually got to cover each of their games. Just so happened I covered their game in the first round, and they ended up making this crazy run. So, you know, those sorts of things, you know, it's tough to match those. But at the same time, I mean, I covered Quinnipiac's run of the Frozen Four 2 years ago, and that was just, you know, something that no matter how much I do, you know, or for how long I do it, that'll always stick out. But, you know, and then you get your moments where professional sports, you know, they can stand out. You know, I haven't really covered much in the way myself. Covered your Travelers Championship a couple of years back, actually. You know, you get like a Game 7 of the World Series like it was last year where it comes down to one pitch and a crazy play at the end. Where, you know, so everything has its moments. It's hard to pick among it all. But that's why we're in the field, Jer.
Yes, it is. Real fast, who won the Travelers Championship the year you covered?
It was the fellow from Australia, Leishman, Mark,
yes.
Whatever his last name is.
Who's wife?
It was like 20.
Right now,
I think it was 2012.
Play in the Masters, but yes, Mark Leishman.
There you go. Yeah, Bubba. I think Bubba was leading into the final day, and he kind of torpedoed, and Leishman came back to win. So good tournament.
Thanks.
Though. Nice golf course up in Cromwell, and if you're ever in the neck of the woods, we'll take a drive up.
Absolutely. Kyle Brennan, thanks for coming on Teeing It Up.
Always a pleasure, Jared. Thanks.
Let's move on to Ryan Ballingy, Golf News Net, Yahoo's Double Ball Golf blog. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, Jared. How are you?
I'm good. I was actually playing golf. I have not seen one piece of video from Tiger's practice session. Number one, did you? And number two, are the tweets I'm seeing that are very positive indicative of what you saw?
I saw a little bit of it, and GC Tiger Tracker, the folks at Golf Channel, who had a camera on the guy who were showing it during life of the Masters, counted 69 hit shots during his practice session, and all but two were at least okay. So, no obvious turf turnovers or stalls or anything like that. So, I guess that's a positive sign, but I have a feeling that that's not really going to be indicative of his game. And he's been working on a short game for over a month now. I mean, February 5th is the last time we saw him play competitively, so it's basically been 2 months since he's played competitive golf. And at this point, I don't think it's an issue of whether or not he can produce it on the range. He's probably done that ad nauseum. But it's an issue of whether or not he can do it when he's inside the ropes and the gun goes off. So I wait anxiously until Thursday to see when he misses whatever first green he's going to miss, first green, third green, whatever, what he can do on these surfaces that are not forgiving and reject bad chip shots. There was a bad chip shot on the practice range, and it's okay, but he can't get away with it during the tournament. He's going to make bogeys and double bogeys, so he's got to find a way to either manage bad chip shots if he expects to hit bad chip shots, or if he expects to hit good ones, then we're going to get some good results.
Ryan, let's now move off to something else besides the Masters just for a second. Did you get your version of the World Golf Ranking done, or is that still a thing in progress?
It's still a thing in progress. We're still going to do it based off the first, basically going back before the Shell Houston Open. So we'll start fresh based off the 2014 year-end ranking, and then we'll calculate based on all the rating points that we come up with based on that system. So we're going to make a couple alterations as well to the categories on how you get your ranking points, since we're going to kind of inflate the points a little bit, the system we've come up with. So we're still going to do that. So hopefully the week after the Masters we'll be able to pull that off. Unfortunately, we tried to get it last week, couldn't get it done, but hopefully it'll give people still a good sense of what an altered world ranking system might look like, the one that considers more golfers and considers margin of victory and some other stuff that the official world golf ranking simply just doesn't pay mind to today.
Let's just go through some names here, and we will run from there when it comes to this week. Jordan Spieth, do you put any stock in the fact that he lost yesterday, or is he still somebody who maybe losing yesterday was actually okay because it'll make him, you know, a bit, you know, teed off and it'll help him this week?
I think the losing's okay. I mean, if you look at the track record of the guys that won the week before the Masters, there are that many that have been successful the next week. I mean, Anthony Kim, among the guys who have won the Shell Houston Open the week before the Masters in 2007, he's the best finisher. He finished third, and that's really the last time we've heard from Anthony Kim. So that is not indicative of good things. So I think for Spieth, getting into contention is good for him to get to the playoffs to make that, 10, 12-footer, 15-footer from the fringe to get that par to get in the playoff. I think that's the thing he's going to try to take away from this week more than losing in the playoff. Since I think he believed he had a really good drive in the first playoff hole and ultimately just maybe pulled it a little bit or the wing got a little bit more than maybe he expected. So I think he's going to be feeling really good about it because he's been in the final group on Sunday in the last three PGA Tour starts. one in Tampa, very respectable second at the Texas Open. Jimmy Walker was playing superior golf that day, that week. So I love his chances, but he's my guy to win this thing. So I don't see any reason why a little bit of a letdown for one hole on Sunday in Houston is enough to kind of hurt his chance.
Speaking of Jimmy Walker, he was so impressive, in Texas. He kind of flies under the radar. He's not the guy who usually pops up. Is this the week he nabs his first major?
I love Walker's chances. He had his first appearance last year, which is pretty impressive, obviously, for a guy who's never been there. He hits the ball just so long. He's putting really well. I mean, he's doing everything right. I've never seen him perform extremely well on a very firm course until his last start out, which kind of changed my mind a little bit on him, because regardless of the conditions, whether it rains or not, obviously there's a lot of rain in the forecast, regardless of what happens, I think he can handle whatever Augusta National throws at him. So I am not reluctant at all to think he's going to be in the mix on Sunday.
By the way, Tiger, for what it's worth, and whether you take stock in a practice round or not, he birdies number one. He three-putts number two. He birdies number three. He stiffs it on number four. He almost jars it on number seven, and he pipes his drive on number eight. If this is the Tiger we're going to see, and obviously this coverage that he's getting is just crazy and it's not normal for somebody's Masters practice round to be getting that, this much attention. But if he plays well, and if he puts, or if he plays well enough to put himself into contention, obviously competitive rust becomes a whole separate issue. But do you give Tiger any chance to win a green jacket this week?
Great. Crazier things I don't think ever happened in golf. If you were to win, I would think you'd be up there with Jack and six in terms of the greatest Masters story ever. It'd certainly be the greatest golf story of the 21st century for him to pull the ball. I think back to the 2011 Masters where he found a way to get into contention and on the front nine, and obviously kind of made it down the stretch to make a putt. But his putting's pretty good. I think the putting that he demonstrated so far this year is considerably better than what we saw down the stretch in 2011. So if he can figure out the long game and just putt barely okay, I think he's going to do well. I think soft conditions hurt him a little bit because he can't. Basically, you know what? I take that back. Soft conditions help him because it's going to help make up for a potentially lousy short game, because he'll be able to stop it. He can hit the ball higher and kind of do it with a little bit of impunity. So maybe he's got to pray for a little bit of rain and find his game from tee to green to be able to succeed. But I don't think it's out of the realm. I still think back to that 2010 start where he finished T4 after everything that happened in his personal life. And yes, that was all his doing. But I just get the sensation that it's going to be really hard for him to pull this off, given all the heavyweights that are now standing in his way between him and this green jacket.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch, that's for sure. Let's talk about a guy who is without doubt helped by Tiger being there, and that is Rory McIlroy and his quest for the Grand Slam. He hasn't played great this year. He's played okay. What's your read on him? Is he peaking at the right time?
I think his liability this week is going to be inside 125 yards. It's where he struggled this year. It's where he struggled in 2013 when he didn't win on the PGA Tour and everyone played with the Nike equipment. It was fundamentally his game inside 125. He was killing them. He putts streaks. We all know that. So if he can putt pretty well, then he's certainly going to play very well. Like Tiger, I think soft conditions help. He can play extremely aggressive and not have to worry about going long or hitting the wrong spot as much as you otherwise would if it were firm and fast or difficult Augusta National conditions. He's so long and straight off the tee that it gives him an advantage on pretty much every hole that he's on the golf course. So I like his chances. I just think he has to be able to find his wedge game for 4 days And if he can do that to get himself out of trouble, and if he does need to lay up a par five, then be able to hit a good shot and get it close, then I love his chance. But that's the big question mark for me, is can he get up and down from inside 125 for birdies and pars? And I just don't know that for certain.
Did Phil do enough in Houston last week to convince you that he can make a run? Obviously, you know, Augusta's done some weird things to Phil, and he kind of gets a spark when he drives under that, drives on the Magnolia Lane. Has he shown you enough to give you faith?
Yeah, the two things that, well, really one thing stood out to me in two consecutive weeks in Texas, at the Texas Open in Houston, were Saturday he got him. And they weren't good Saturday rounds. Sunday was fine, and he kind of had a respectable finish based on those Sunday minutes, you know, the Sunday round. Obviously, moving day is the master that sets up everything and dictates how you play the golf course on Sunday. I think Phil's got to get over whatever's going on with him on Saturday to be able to contend, but he did show some really good proficiency with the putter the last couple weeks. He's looking at confidence back there, going back to some things, and a putter that has worked for him previously in the majors. A putter he's using now, he won the 05 PGA with at Baltusrol, which is a very difficult golf course and tough conditions that week. So I think for him, he knows the golf course so well and plays so inspired like Fred Couples does that he's green and spine. Can he make those putts, and can he do what he needs to do on Saturday to put himself in position on Sunday?
I've got two sleepers for you. I've got Steve Stricker, who's coming in with nothing, literally nothing, which means he's got nothing to lose, which means he's a very dangerous guy. And number two, and I'm going to mispronounce his first name, Anurag Lahiri, who's 39th in the world, who's got two wins on the European Tour, who no casual golf fan in America has heard of, but can play, and he might be that guy who flies under everybody's radar and just creeps up.
I like Lahiri a lot. I mean, he's had a monumental rise to the European Tour, a couple of wins, coming from a guy that I think was basically playing for status towards the tail of the last year to a guy who's in the top 50 in the world. So he's certainly seen a big rise in his game. I don't know if he's going to step up on the stage, but I like what I've seen with him. Sugar's an interesting case because he's not even semi-retirement. He's in like three-quarter retirement at this point. So with a new hip, basically after coming after hip surgery, so he's got to feel at least pretty good about himself, and his wedge game is just so good that if he can get around, and for him, you want firm at that because he putts so well, and his length is going to be a disadvantage if the course plays soft. So our lack of length, I should say, would be a disadvantage. So for him, he doesn't want rain, and he wants to be able to have an opportunity to hit wedges in where he can stick closer to 70, 75 yards. So yeah, it's kind of a weather-based pick, but I wouldn't be surprised if Sugar played well. He's perfectly rested, and there's nothing to lose. I mean, who expects Steve Sugar to win? And if he does, it's pretty incredible.
Who is your guy that has no shot?
I think for like the fifth year running, it's still Mark Keimer. I know he can hit a semblance of a draw now, and I know he feels a little bit more comfortable in these holes, but until results dictate otherwise, guy I think with no chance. The other guy I will start to throw in that conversation, especially if Keimer figures it out this year and he has two majors under his belt and can hit that draw with more confidence, is Webb Simpson, who is going to be a part of this event for the next several years and has not produced a round under 70 in three prior Masters appearances. So he's starting to become that Martin Keimer type thing.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible. For Webb Simpson, who is your winner and who is your sleeper?
Jordan Spieth is my winner. And I just think he's got the total package going right now. And he's just long enough, he's aggressive enough, he's confident enough on the green. I think it'll work out for him. My sleeper is Bernhard Langer. I spent some time with him last month in Florida. And he talked like a guy who still thinks he can win a regular major championship at 57 years old. And he was 26 last year. So him and Adam Scott's not a sleeper, but the guys who are playing with the longer putter, the long putter, broomstick, or belly, their last chance to win a Masters using that stroke. And I think it's going to weigh heavy on their mind. You know, this is an opportunity they can't let slip by. So I'd be very, very disappointed to see him, both Adam Scott and Bernhard Langer as well, but sleeper would be Langer, obviously.
Final thing, and this is off topic, but what we saw yesterday at the Mayonnaise Inspiration with that Stacey Lewis, Brittany Lincecum playoff, we've seen so many times the way the ball bounces have so much of an impact, and obviously with Stacey Lewis, that ball ending up in the middle of that divot just basically ruled that any shot of her getting that ball close. Is that, you know, me, when I'm watching, I love it. Not that I love seeing somebody get a bad break, but that's so much of what entices me about golf, is that one bounce, one roll, one anything can make such a difference. And when I'm playing, it kills me because it's so frustrating. What's your take on that kind of stuff?
I think in this situation with Stacey Lewis, thank goodness she got the ball across the water. She gave herself an opportunity to get up and down. That wasn't a difficult chip putt. Not whatsoever. So I'm pretty sure she, under normal circumstances, would have got that up and down 70-75% of the time. But I think she was flustered by hitting it to the divot, and instead of just moving on from the shot, which Lincecum would have done, she dwelled on it, and she dwelled on it over the ball for a fourth shot. That's what cost her the golf tournament. So I agree with you. I think that the bounces are what make golf. When you need things to go the right way to win, and even when you're playing your best, you need things to go the right way. And it's in that case for Stacey Lewis, but she had three cracks to win the golf tournament on that green with a putter in her hand, and she didn't pull it off. So there's really no one to blame but herself. She can't blame the divot. She could, but it wouldn't help things. So I think the luck of the game is very important. You take what you're given and you try to make the best of it. That's what champions do. They find a way to make it work.
Sounds like you may be with your family right now, so I hope you enjoy that. I hope you enjoy this Masters week. Thanks, as always, for coming on, Ryan, and have a great week.
Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate it. Bye.
That is Ryan Ballingy. Have a great Masters week, everybody. We'll see you for coverage Wednesday at 3, Thursday at 3, Friday at 3, Saturday at 3, and Sunday at 2. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday on ESPN, Saturday and Sunday with our great friend, the one, the only, Mr. Jim Nantz. Have a great Masters week, everybody. And don't forget, live from on Golf Channel, basically live every hour of every day, except when coverage is on another network, which you want to watch anyway because that's where the actual coverage is. Have a great night. We'll see you next Monday. Oh, and I never gave my winner, which is also Jordan Spieth.